Good morning. I'd like to welcome everybody to the December 5, 2016 meeting of Chelan County Public Utility District Number 1. This morning's session is a study session. This afternoon, we will have our business session. We've got a very full agenda today. We've got a good crowd, a good audience. Great to see you. This time, I'd like to share, there's four commissioners here. All commissioners except Commissioner Bergeron. Our general managers here, Eric Walquist and Sheila Salmon, the normal staff for our meeting. For those who haven't been here before, our meetings are recorded. And if you wish to address any item on the agenda, I ask that you come up to the table, use the microphone, state your name and address for the record. And that way we have a clear record of all activity that went on here. Also, just a reminder that we appreciate it if you would silence your cell phones at this time. And as we always do, we'd like to start this meeting with a Pledge of Allegiance and a Safety Minute led by Ryan Baker.
I pledge
allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, good morning. My name is Ryan Baker, and I'm a park superintendent here at the district, and just wanted to share some tips on safe moving, something I did just recently. So I have a couple lessons learned as well. One thing, if you can afford it, I would recommend a moving company. I'll tell you, there's a lot more stuff in your basement than you realize, so. Try to go with that if you can. If you can't, make sure you have plenty of friends and neighbors that can help you out. Second, have a game plan. Talk about that with your wife or your husband. Talk about where you're going to move things. Nothing worse than moving things three or four times. Let me tell you that one. Lifting. Make sure you're using proper lifting techniques, keeping things close to your body, not bending your back, using your legs. Second thing or third thing would be use mechanical means. If you can use dollies or appliance dollies, those things are very nice when it comes to moving heavy safes or heavy furniture. Keep the halls clear when you bring in things. Don't stack it in the middle of the way when you're not looking where you're going. Put things in the corners if you can or just out of the way. One thing that I didn't do great at was eat. Don't forget to eat. Don't forget to stay hydrated. You're in a hurry. You want to get things in there safely, make sure everybody's safe, but I forgot to do that, and you tend to run out of gas about halfway through. Lastly, one thing I didn't think about was your kids, right? They want to be helpers, but sometimes they can actually be in the way. So make sure somebody's watching them or they have something to do, as well as your pets. You know, one thing that I didn't realize was my dog was going, what the heck is going on around here? You know, so what they recommend is actually having somebody watch him or putting him in a room as well. Lastly, if any one of you are moving, I am busy. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. That was good.
Thanks, Ryan.
That was very good. Thank you. Commissioners, item 2 on the agenda is the approval of the agenda, and at this time, any item on the regular agenda can be subject to transfer to the consent agenda, and at this time, if there's any desire to have any additional item considered for the agenda, this is the time to make that request for the commission's consideration. Commissioners.
Mr. Chairman, taking a look at some written material and conversation with our general manager and then reviewing resolutions, I would recommend resolutions 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16 to the consent agenda.
Okay, there's a recommendation from one commissioner that we move 5 resolutions to consent. Is there any disagreement amongst the other commissioners? If not, we will move those 5 to the consent agenda.
The only question I have is under 12. Is that Lurch, Bates, or is that Lurch? Because I was thinking Adams Family.
We'll refer that to our general counsel. Yeah.
All right.
So I'll send an email.
That was your first action item of the day. Okay. Item 3 is the pre-legislative update.
Commissioners, just a reminder that we have the Tri-Commission meeting coming up, the annual Tri-Commission meeting to discuss legislative issues. And so we have a couple of discussions with the delegation regarding both our own agenda and then a cumulative agenda from the Tri-Commission.
Good morning, everyone. Tracy Yunt, Director of External Affairs. And with me today is Sean Seaman. He's our state lead, manager on the state for our legislative affairs. And then you all know Dave Arbaugh, Arbaugh and Associates, the other half of our face in Olympia. But between these two, they are going to be representing us again this year at the state legislative session that, as I understand it, should only last 9 to 12 months. No? Okay.
Hey, one of the representatives spoke at our breakfast at our state conference, yeah. And she said, and we'll see you in July, 4th of July celebration.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. So these guys will get into it a little bit. So we're going to give a little bit of an overview. Obviously, we had an election, so there's some changes there. Touch on our major policy areas and committees of interest. Some overarching issues. We do have some things that touch on both the state and the national level. And getting also into some specific issues of interest that we're anticipating for those. Obviously, there are a lot of things that we don't know what will happen this legislative session, but there are some things we're expecting. And no decisions required by the board. So with that, Mr. Arbaugh is going to dive into our session and legislature overview. Dave.
So before he does that, I'm just curious if you'll be checking your cell phone during this presentation and letting us know the status of the federal energy bill.
I was just doing that, and as of a minute ago, I have nothing new.
I'll stand by for interruptions, Terry. Good morning, all. It's a pleasure to be here once again. I'm Dave Arbaugh, and I do work for you in Olympia along with your team here, who spends a considerable amount of time over there as well. As Tracy mentioned, we've just undergone an election, and the big questions going into it were, what kind of an effect would the national elections have on some of these down-ballot races, at state legislative levels, for instance? And the answer turned out to be not much. There isn't a big change. There is no change in the majorities of either the House or the Senate. We have the same governor. Some small changes in the Senate, the seats changed a little bit. The Republican-dominated majority coalition caucus lost a seat. The Democrats picked up a seat, but it doesn't change the majority. They still have a 25 to 24 majority, so it's very thin. The same situation exists in the House. Going into the election, 50 seats held by Democrats, 48 by Republicans. That number didn't change, although some of the seats did. What that means is that each of those majority parties still controls the agenda. They still will have the chairs for the committees, and they will drive much of the conversation. But it also means that because the numbers are so close, the House, if one member decides to vote with the, if one Democrat decides to vote with the Republican Party, then there's a tie. Most issues are not partisan issues and are not decided that closely, but often there are issues like the budget, for instance, where that could make a difference. And same situation exists in the Senate, very close, of course. So I expect that will mean difficult politics around budget discussions and figuring out what the 2017-2019 budget biennial budget should look like. But on policy issues, I don't expect much of a different tone than we have seen over the last 2 years at least. Let's see. Oh, the other thing I wanted to touch on with respect to the elections is that we're also going to see some changes. We'll see a few personnel changes in the executive branch. We'll see some changes in committee assignments, particularly in the Senate. I'll get into that in a minute, but that's the outlook. Pardon me?
Interaction with the governor's office. The issue of the governor's office is we still have a strong connection there. We'll be working with these committees, and there'll probably be an opportunity later to talk about our interactions with the governor's office.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Major policy areas we cover have not really changed. We spend a considerable amount of time on the primary business lines for the utility: energy, water, telecommunication, all established in statute. Energy will be somewhat interesting this year because of what's happened on the national stage. We expect some changes. Perhaps the Clean Power Plan will be pulled back. We expect a continued regional focus, maybe concentration among the West Coast states on dealing with carbon emission issues. So we in Olympia are staying coordinated with Suzanne and others at the utility to make sure that we have a seamless approach to those topics. Telecommunications, also we expect some things this year with the PUD Association's interest in retail authority bills. And then, again, the budget sort of dominate the entire conversation with the legislature this year. Now, I mentioned the committees that we focus on deal with these policy areas, and I mentioned some changes in the Senate in particular, and I want to just take a moment to focus on that. The three key committees we work with are the Energy, Environment, and Telecommunications Committee, Government Ops, and then Ways and Means. Ways and Means is obvious. It's the fiscal issues that the state deals with. So any kind of state financial interaction between the district and the state, that's the committee that counts there. In government operations, I understand that the majority party is looking at trying something new. In the House, there is a state government committee and a local government committee, and now I think the Senate is going to try that approach and split out state and local government issues into two different policy committees. Also, some changes in personnel. Senator Braun is expected to step up to chair the Ways and Means Committee, and nothing is finalized yet, but that's what my understanding is. And then that's because Senator Hill, who was the chair, unfortunately passed away after an illness with cancer earlier this year. The Senate Government Operations Committee, chaired by Senator Roach, will get a new chair because Senator Roach was elected to a Pierce County Council position and can't continue to serve both positions at the same time. So she'll be stepping down from the Senate, creating a change there. And I think it'll probably be, the chairmanship will probably go to a guy named Senator Dansel from the 7th District, the northeast corner of the state. I have no word yet, no information on if a new local government committee is created in the Senate who would chair that. And then finally, the Energy Committee is chaired by Senator Erickson, and he is has been very active in President-elect Trump's campaign, and there have been rumors swirling that he would be appointed to something potentially in the new administration. I don't know that that will happen. I don't expect that that would happen prior to session, so I anticipate he will continue to chair the committee through session, and that may that may change middle of the year next year. We'll see. Anything I should add? So I just want to briefly mentioned the big sort of landscape overarching dominant issue confronting the legislature this year is the state budget. The legislature's principal job is to approve, and it has to be balanced, a state budget for the next biennium. And the rules for this state are that the two-year biennial budget also has to balance 4 years out. So that complicates it. The legislature approved this rule a few years ago in an attempt to try to smooth out the troughs and make for more consistent, less tumultuous budget processing. The forecast, the economic forecast, was just released a couple of weeks ago. And based on those numbers, the current law budget, if it were carried forward into the 2017 biennium, would be underfunded by about $1.5 billion. That does not include any consideration of McCleary compensation. So if you add the McCleary numbers to the $1.5 billion, and making assumptions, because we don't know yet exactly what the McCleary fix would cost, and there are other issues in there in addition to McCleary, but we're probably looking at something around a $5 billion shortfall. So that's the setting that the legislature will confront when they get to Olympia and begin working on the budget in January. And that will color everything else, particularly issues that have anything to do with finance. So I'll stop. Sean's going to talk carbon for a minute.
Well, I'm sure we could talk carbon for a lot more for a minute, but at this point, it's another one of the large overarching issues for us. And we know we've been hearing of and seen, even in previous years, carbon programs that included a cap and invest or trade bills. The clean air rule is out, and will the legislature respond to that? And there might be some other issues we'll talk about with ecology itself that will be administering that. But there's various proposals that have been kicked around in the interim. There's conversations around the renewable portfolio standard that's under the Energy Independence Act, or I-937, possible changes there to amend that. Electrification of transportation, electric vehicles is one of them, but it could be broader than that as well. We put here Representative Morris Bills. He spent considerable time in the interim meeting once a month to try and come up with some, what concepts would the utilities would like to see, and other stakeholders in this case, related to carbon. We have not seen those. We expected to see those prior to the start of the session, but we haven't seen anything yet. Senate had some bills last year, particularly around the cap and trade. Again, I-937 post-2020. The bill itself, the standards and other aspects of a date of when things change in 2020, the bill itself ends, will continue to do conservation, will continue to have a portfolio standard, but what would happen after 2020? And these conversations have been going on for a number of years and will continue to go on this year related to legislation. So on that, the PRD perspective related to carbon is that we are seeking, and I can read this, but we're basically seeking, we want to integrate the least cost planning, but we want to be reliable, meet our loads reliably in doing that. But we're also trying to get to our greenhouse gas emission targets for the state. We want to support that. But this is a challenge for us. These are two objectional functions that are going to be difficult to bring together. But because of the difficulty of those, we need to work on these further. And more evaluation, more work towards how are we going to address these two objectives, these two targets. So that'll be ongoing during this session. Our issues of interest, and many of these are just rehashing. You've seen these in the last couple of years. They tend to keep coming back. Our fuel mix disclosure, I'm not going to read all these. You can see all these. Solar. But I want to focus on, particularly on this list, is Retail Telecom Authority. Dave mentioned this earlier. Waputa's pushing authority issues, but for Chelan PUD, it's still a safe harbor provision. Safe harbor is that for a utility like us, we have one dominant provider. If there was a need to, that dominant provider was to no longer able to offer services, we want the ability to provide internet-only services to our customers, our fiber customers, internet services on an interim basis. That's going to be our fallback. The pole attachments, this has to do, of course, with telecom companies that are attached to our poles. That's going to be an active issue this year as well. There's been some court cases recently that will probably lend to some other activity, but there tends to be a linkage between the telecom industry pole attachments and then what kind of authorities would they support or not support for the PUDs. So they're going to be linked. We might not be able to decouple those.
The last one I'll point out is the funding for aquatic invasive species programs. I think many of you saw there was a recent detection of invasive mussel larvae in Montana. We used to say they're not in the northwest states, but now we have them in Montana. It's on the east side of the divide, which is good, but they're in Montana now. I will mention, though, the Centennial Grant funding. This is for the Peshastin Project. We're still scoping out how much that we want to get for that wastewater project related to the phosphorus. But we'll be pushing that part of the budget issues that Dave talked about to ensure that there's adequate funding to fund the Centennial Grant under Department of Ecology's request.
John, what are those mussels, the invasive mussels called?
There's zebra and quagga mussels. They didn't identify which. They just said invasive mussels at this point. But either one of them would be of concern to us. With that, is there any questions?
Yes, I've got one, and I think it might be for Dave, but any of you can feel free to answer. Several years ago, maybe as many as 10 years ago, the citizens of the state of Washington passed an initiative creating a, quote, top two primary system for our elected officials. I'm curious, based on your length of time in Olympia and your observation of legislators coming and going, if, as some people suspected, that has created a more moderate approach to governing by bringing more centrist politicians to the forefront?
Well, that's an interesting question.
And by the way, that is definitely a question for Dave.
Thank you, Tracy. I'm not sure I can answer it. I think that the new system is no longer new, but that the current system probably more accurately reflects what's going on in the sentiment of voters in legislative districts. I guess the part I'm struggling with is whether it's encouraged a more of a moderate approach to some of these issues, and I don't know that it has. What is interesting to me is that I see, you know, when you file now for office, you don't have to pick a Republican Party or the Democratic Party. You see, you know, maybe a dozen different variations on what these parties are, who you identify with, Republican or the Independent Democrat or the New Republican or whatever. And after the election, all of these newish labeled candidates still wind up in one of two rooms for their caucuses. And they still functionally act as though they are the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. And we still see the process, you know, setting up sort of an adversarial discussion, but it doesn't work very well without the ability for people to reach across the aisle and work together. And I think, I don't know that I'm answering your question, but what I think is missing more today than we used to see is that folks, legislators that are interested in establishing relationships with people in the other party are not as comfortable doing that. In fact, I would say in some cases they might even be discouraged from doing that just because of the political discourse in today's society. So I have to think more about this and give you a better answer, but that's just off the top of my head. Any more softballs, just let me have
it. All right. Well, we know you guys are going to have your plate full come January. So thank you for what you do.
Yeah, thanks. It's a pleasure.
All right, thanks.
Thanks. fees and charges update.
Recall that we had a conversation about fees and charges last time. Kathy Milton and John Stahl and Andy Wendell apparently are going to join us. To go through the, there were three questions that you asked us at the last meeting, and we wanted to provide answers to those.
Good morning, Commissioners. John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. With me is Andy Wendell, Director of Customer Service. Later today, there will be a couple of resolutions restating utility regulations and utility policies, primarily in relation to line extension changes, as discussed 2 weeks ago. But there were three questions. We wanted to come back and provide a response. Andy's going to take the first two. One was on a discussion around the latecomer changes to the line extension policy. The third one was on meter location and installation, and particularly how it impacts the fiber infrastructure. And then the last one is on the high-density loads and some metering options we're looking at.
Thank you, John. Good morning, Commissioners. As John mentioned, in our fees and charges, we had made some minor adjustments to our latecomers. Just to reflect on the policy around latecomers as it relates to our line extensions, the latecomer policy is designed to have a fair and equitable cost allocation to people that connect to a line extension for a single lot residence. If a single lot residence builds a line extension and somebody beyond them wants to connect, the original contributor would receive a contribution back as part of the overall cost. So in the end, the concept is that there's a fair and equitable cost allocation to that cost of line to all of the people that participated. Our policy has had a long-standing value of excluding developers from this, talking commercial, residential developers who generally recover the cost of infrastructure, surveying, those types of activities. They recover those costs through the sale of their properties. So they are excluded from receiving latecomers fees. We do have a rare circumstance, but there is a case where a property owner can act in the spirit of development through doing a boundary line adjustment. It looks and feels a lot like developing property. That was not very clear in our latecomers policy, so we have included language to incorporate those property owners who are using boundary line adjustments to achieve a theoretical development status. That is the change that we're requesting in the line extension policy, and it's very consistent with our business practice of latecomers historically. So I'm hoping that answers that question regarding the changes that we're making. It's very, very small in nature, very rare in nature, but it does come up. Okay. Without any more questions, I'll move on to the metering location and installation. Just to reflect on that particular change, the district was recommending a clearance requirement from an electrical meter. As we know, our workers need to put in new meters. They need to work with existing meters, make modifications, and perform electrical work in and around those meters. In order to maintain safe operations, the district is recommending that we establish a 36-inch horizontal and vertical space from the face of the meter outward and from the face of the building outward. This 36-inch clearance would ensure safe working operations. The question came up in the last board meeting, does this also include a 36-inch clearance from the ONT, or the operating network terminal device that supports our fiber optic network? We consulted with our fiber engineers and technicians since the last board meeting and concluded that the ONT device, the fiber optic terminal device, is generally located on a home or a business that's closer to the telecommunications or communications network. It is not always, and in some cases rarely, associated with locating directly to the electric meter device. So at this point in time, the 36-inch radius that we're recommending does not include the ONT device. However, it's important to note that our engineers and our operations folks are working together continuously to look at these clearances and standards and making recommendations even on an annual basis for improvements. So I hope that clarifies that.
It does to a point. There was a time when we were doing quite a bit of extension of fiber by utilizing current conduit. And so you'd have the electric wire and the fiber in the same conduit. So hence the question still, are we still doing that? Are we not doing that? Is that common, uncommon?
Sure.
Do we violate our own principles by cohabitating in the same conduit? Just questions.
Sure. Each fiber run is evaluated on a case by case as to whether or not we co-locate with electrical conduit. There are still cases where, because of operational reasons or cost benefits, that fiber is co-located with electric conduit. Generally speaking, once they hit the premises, they're separated and they move to different locations. The question did come up as to whether or not this 36-inch radius would exclude the ONT device from being within that 36-inch radius. I would say on a move-forward basis, that is the preference, that the ONT device would be outside of that 36-inch radius. Okay. If that causes operational issues or incremental cost increases, we might be back revisiting that.
Okay. Thank you.
And I'm going to take the last question. That was on the metering for the high-density loads. We've had quite a bit of discussions around that. Currently, our base approach is what we do with just about every other meter is we visit it once a month and we get the read and we identify if there are any high bills or high read issues that we want to investigate. As we move forward with HDL, that really isn't sufficient given the dynamics around those type of loads. So we've evaluated some options. Our next case would be installing a meter that would store more incremental data, but it still relies on that visit to the meter to interrogate it, to download that data, and then analyze it for demand, usage, things of that nature. We asked ourselves about utilizing some of the technology we use for our large industrial customers. It was an interesting discussion. It's actually pretty dated technology that the parts and pieces aren't really that available. We utilize actually, I didn't know this, but old cell phone, old bag phones to kind of help communicate those reads, and that's conducted on a daily basis. It's then downloaded, and we actually have a program that's third party that we upload that information to that our industrial customers are able to look at. So when they're looking at managing their load, managing their peak, it works for our existing footprint of industrial customers, but it's really not a sustainable, durable solution. So then we're asking ourselves, are there other technologies out there that we could use? So we have discovered one. It's more on the way of a two-way metering system. We're looking to leverage the fiber system, understanding that most of these high-density loads should be associated with a fiber service. So where it stands right now, we're actually going to enter into a proof of concept to see if we can develop that connectivity. Just, you know, a very isolated connection so we can try that, inform our business case, and then evaluate the business case with the technology and come back probably sometime in first quarter to make a recommendation and evaluate that technology. So we have that more real-time data, not only for us, but for those customers as well. So they can, you know, potentially see their load and we can manage it and see if it's staying within the parameters of, you know, their application and what they've stated. So that's where we're at there. Hopefully that addresses that issue. It's something, again, we're still evaluating and we will be over the next couple of months.
Any additional questions? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Red flags.
I'm going to turn this one over to Eric.
So, good morning, Commissioners. You'll recall back in October of 2008, the board was meeting its compliance obligation with federal statutes, and we adopted an identity theft prevention program. That statute and the policy and program adopted by the board requires an update annually in public session to the board about how that program is going and whether we've had any alerts, which is where the term red flag comes from, or any failures, and then to give you an update to anything that has changed significantly in that program. So we've done that every year since adoption, and now's the time to give you that update this year. So I'm happy to report that we have had no identity theft failures in our program or processes this year. So that's a good news story and one that we share with the board annually to date. In terms of updates to the program this year, there's really only been one, and that is that you'll recall here a couple of months ago now, I think, the board did adopt the state customer privacy policy program compliant with the state statute recently enacted. And so we have, as part of that adoption, the board has directed, and we have now carried out, that we have given oversight of that state compliance obligation to the group that is formed as a committee to oversee the federal identity theft prevention program. So the same group of individuals is working on those same collective issues under both the federal and the state program. So that's my update. Any questions about that?
Thank you. Any questions for Eric?
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you. Public power benefit. Look back, look forward.
We want to give you an update. We had committed to bringing you back the amount of money spent under public power benefit for 2015-16, as well as where we're at moving forward 2017. And want to tee up an issue about how we close out a period in which we've allocated dollars for public power benefit. This is the first time we've confronted this. So we made some commitments in terms of our availability of funding for 2015 and 16 collectively when we adopted the strategic plan. And we're now hitting into the end of the first period under public power benefit as we close out fiscal year 2016. So Kelly Boyd will be helping us walk through this conversation.
Good morning. Thank you for that brief pause while we located our presentation. For the record, I am Kelly Boyd, Chief Financial and Risk Officer. And joining me today is a new employee that I would like to introduce. This is Micah Linderman. This is week number 4 for Micah. And like we do, we like to jump right into the assignments. Micah is a senior analyst. He's going to report to Felicity Saberhagen. And he is a Wenatchee High School and UPS grad, so I don't think he will mind sitting next to me in my celebratory Husky purple. He has a BS in mathematics and a minor in economics and 14 years of experience as a actuary. So included in his new duties will be the overall program management for the public power benefit program and the continued development of our formal program and processes. So Mike will be joining us today to jump right into that assignment. So as we near the end of the year, we have been updating the board on the status of the public power benefit program. It started with the status updates of the projects themselves, an update in October and an update in November. Today, we, as Steve mentioned, we will do the dollar funding update, as well as talk about closeout options for our first initial two-year period of funding. We will be requesting board guidance either today or the next meeting, however the discussion rolls out, since we are still in that learning phase of getting the hang of how to administer this program. It, as I mentioned, it has been a learning period for us. We'll continue to learn and further develop and improve the program as we go. And this discussion today is part of that. And I did want to read a commission overview of the public power benefit program from when it was initially adopted, just because I think it really helps us get our thoughts in order. So it's, we are taking a measured approach to any public power benefit spending. Any additional spending will be evaluated carefully to ensure that we are taking care of our vital infrastructure first, improving the financial health of the organization, and that we aren't obligating our customer owners to spending beyond our means. And I think that overview is just a really good one that continues to apply as we work through the actual development of this program. So I think that's a good way to get our thoughts together and then jump into the funding update. So as everyone probably recalls, we did start out in this startup phase with a two-year funding bucket. We began the program within 2015 as part of the implementation of the 2015 to 2019 strategic plan. So we started within a year, and since we were just getting started, we knew that it would be fluid between what we could accomplish in the first year and the next year. So knowing that we had that fluidity to it, we did establish a two-year funding period. This will be unique because from this point forward, we do envision that it would be an annual funding period and annual decision making. And to make it even a little more complicated, the two-year spending or the two-year funding bucket, and I will, it's not very eloquent, but I'm going to refer to it as the bucket because it makes it easier to kind of keep our thoughts together. From that bucket, we allocated money to specific projects that would have spending in 2015, 2016, 2017, and a couple of them will even roll into 2018. And one of the reasons why they're spending, even though we've made choices to fund them out of this bucket, is because we have that overarching life cycle funding philosophy here where we want to ensure that any decision we make, we set the funds aside at the beginning to fund the entire program. So a couple of these are two-year programs. A couple of them we wanted to designate the funding, but we knew the actual work couldn't start until the next year and that type of thing. So while we are making those project funding decisions, the actual spending, it will be, I think, a common practice to see that that funding will happen over a number of years. So with that in mind, and we did have 13 specific projects that had active funding. We worked on a couple other focuses, but they were staff only time, so we didn't have a separate accounting for those. So we, in the next couple of slides, I will just highlight those 13 projects of how the funding of the funding results. So fiber expansion, I'll start right off with an exception. You know, I describe this as an annual program, and we set aside the funding for the entire life cycle of the program at the beginning to ensure it's affordable. But the fiber expansion is a somewhat of an exception to that rule because we knew it was about an 11-year program. And we still have the annual decision-making abilities with that so that the program can go up or down pace-wise, consistent with affordability in those years. But we really are setting aside the full amount of starting those individual areas of build out so we can ensure that anything we start, we can stop. So even though we haven't spent some of the money because we've been progressing slower, some of the things that you've been hearing about of getting the requirements and structures in a row first before starting on some of those, we haven't spent all the money for these two-year programs, but we have set it all aside and we'll continue to have that amount designated to ensure that it wouldn't be allocated somewhere else because we know we are going to spend it on that. It's just the pace at which it may be carried out could be a little bit slower. So for fiber expansion, you do see spending in 15, 16, and 17 and beyond, even though this is really the two-year period for 15 and 16. The spending will just be a little bit slower than originally planned. But we don't want to reduce that funding level because we do want those funds available to complete all of that, and they're not, we wouldn't want to double allocate them to another project. So fiber is a little bit of an exception to the rule. because we do, we will have a longer spending period for that. The waive the day use park fees pilot for the 2-year period, we did have spending of $160,000 on that project. And as you heard in the update, it was a successful pilot. And in 2017, we will move into that being in the program mode of offering that program with the annual decision making. So that pilot is complete. The install electric vehicle charges is also anticipated to be complete at the end of the year with $65,000 of total spending on that project to provide the, I believe, 4 electric vehicle charging stations. The Horan area rehabilitation work has spending in 2015 and 16, but also will have additional spending in 2017 and is in a little bit of a timing mode with some development that's going on in that area too to ensure anything that's done there doesn't need to be redone because of future plans for the area. So I think that spending for that will be a little bit slower also than planned. But the $100,000 funding level still is considered to be adequate for the completion of that work. Splash pad technical feasibility study was one of the updates at the last meeting with the total spending at $140,000. For the completion of this piece of the study, knowing that that is one of those projects that's being put on hold until we know more about how some of the approach to early action credit for relicensing may turn out. So that funding is complete for this phase, and then that project is on hold for a wait and see. The economic analysis tool was completed this year for $40,000. It is complete, although as with any tool, we will continue to learn more about things we might like to change on it or have functioning better as we use it in practice. So the development of the tool was the public power benefit project. That's complete, but as we use it in our day-to-day work, I'm sure that we will be refining it as we go. The study of utility infrastructure was a mostly internal gathering of information of all of the costs that go into having a new area utility ready. So that is staff time that you see reflected here, and that project is expected to be complete at the $5,000 level. Utility-focused education programs is a good one to talk about as we evolve through the program, because this was one where we knew we wanted to focus in this area and that we needed an additional resource to help carry out this piece of the program. So there was an initial amount of funding set aside about in the $40,000 range. In the work to get the additional resource on board, which the person has joined us recently, we didn't progress on that as quickly as possible. So you see that the forecast for 2016 is smaller, but for 2017 and beyond, it's the number that's here is a internally budget revised number to reflect the total cost of a 2-year limited assignment employee to come in and do the utility focused programs, plus some working money to also have supplies and materials to carry out those programs. And so we want to ensure that we have that 2-year program funded. And so that's what the $172,000 reflects, is the total funding for that 2-year period. And we did do a budget revision internally that's consistent with our delegated authorities that we carry out for our normal budget process to, once we knew what the numbers were a little bit better around this. And all we did was reallocate dollars out of the already set aside bucket, funding bucket, took some out of the unallocated and put it into the specific program. We did that for a few programs within the 2-year time period as we learned more about the ultimate spending. And this utility-focused education was one of them. So that 2-year program will actually overlap a little bit into 2018. So you see that most of the spending is still to come on that.
Kelly, did I hear you right that we have brought the person on board?
Yes.
So once that person is on board, their feet are under them, and they have a directional path that they're working on, could we get an update, you know, regarding that and, you know, get a chance to meet that person and what direction they're going and give a chance to applaud that effort?
Yes, certainly.
Absolutely. I think the first assignment is to do an inventory of what some of the options are and just make sure that we better understand choices that we have. So, yeah, that would make a lot of sense to do that.
Yeah, thank you.
And this is probably a good place just to pause and see if there were, are there questions on any of these other projects on this slide before I move on to the next slide?
You know what? I do have a question, Kelly. The one I don't remember is study utility infrastructure. That seemed kind of broad. Can you help me with that? Number seven.
Sure. So I think it started out as the concept was had to be narrowed down to what was really the point of interest here, and it really was narrowed down into getting all the information together so that you would, so that we would know when somebody is developing a brand new infrastructure from a utility-wise basis, what are all the things that would need to come together and the cost of those in order for somebody to do that. And that was baseline information, so we can use that as we further refine, work around what's the right area for utilities to be, how do we encourage that, how do we study the regional utility questions. So this was just bringing together baseline information of different utilities, water, wastewater, electricity, fiber, all that, that kind of the cost or that goes into that in developing a brand new infrastructure.
What would be an example of a brand new infrastructure?
Oh, sure.
So the...
who are you?
Oh, Andrew Grissel, Manager Energy Development Conservation. I've been working on the project. So it started out fairly broad, like you said, and we were working through it. We wanted to narrow it. And some of the questions come around is, you know, if a company wants to, or if, is there, you know, the original question, is there a benefit if you put in, you know, if utilities into a greenfield site ahead of time to bring people in? And first we wanted to get, okay, how much would it cost for us to do that before we even look at some of those other things? And so this was that study that gathered, if somebody said, hey, here's a greenfield site, nothing on it, you know, what would it cost for to bring infrastructure into there? Then we would have all of that information in one place. And really the goal of this is to bring all that information that we have, bring it into one place so that we have it for to help provide information for decision-making purposes. And so it's not the name of it's a little bit has transformed over time. And so rather than being a study, it's been this bring together of information that's important. That helpful at all?
I think the key here was the question of how do we support economic development? So if you...
There you go. Okay, that's the connector. No, that's just the connector that I needed to take me back.
So if we had a company that was coming to town, are we positioned to be able to respond to them quickly so that they would understand, okay, this is what it would take if you're going into a greenfield site or the services that we can provide, water, wastewater, or electric.
Fiber. Yeah, that helps. Thanks.
Thank you, Andrew and Steve. So also on the project list for this funding period was the study to increase the visitor count at Rocky Reach Visitor Center, which also was an update at the last board meeting. And the $100,000 was the funding total for that project. And that also is a project that is complete to this point in time, but will be put on the on hold shelf until we know more about early action legislation or changes possibilities for relicensing. So that one is complete at this point in time. Plain station substation site improvements are safety improvements to that site. A little bit of the work got started this year for planning, but most of that will be carried out next year. Still the total funding amount of $200,000. Regional water and wastewater study is to come on the plans for next year, just looking at that greater solution for the area. And so that has not yet been begun, but the funding level for that is $150,000. The energy Hydro Energy Research Institute, sorry about that, and Electrification Research and Collaboration, those two kind of go together in the decision making when we talked about funding opportunities in the summer of how to have focus and resources and partnerships in this area. So we are tracking them as two separate efforts just to have that good good decision-making information. But the total was a $370,000 amount for both of them, and we're tracking that in the two separate $250,000 for the work around having a research institute in the area, and $120,000 for the research and collaboration, which is the idea of the graduate student working, hiring a graduate student here to help work with outreach and collaborate with others on that research. So that is also a two-year program, and so that is the two-year amount for that. So with all of those together, the total spending for 2015 was about $1.1 million. The forecasted spending for this year, 2016, is about $1.2 million. And the planned spending out of this funding bucket for 2017 and beyond is about $2.9 million. So for a total funding for this two-year period of about $5.2 million. So that compares to the total that was set aside in this funding of the $8 million. So a remainder of $2.8 million. So that's the summary of the work for this. I do see a potential question coming up. So before that, I was just going to say that I do think we can kind of put a pin in this piece, though, after knowing where we're at, and I'll come back to it after a quick look at 2017 about, so what do we do now with this amount? So before doing that, is there a question?
Well, maybe more of a comment. So if you look at this entire page here, with our funding of 2015 and 16, in essence, we as a commission have created a what I would call a bow wave of money that we are not able to practically put on the ground in a timely fashion. And we're facing a $2.8 million issue going forward that we haven't committed it this year or last year. Where are we going to go?
So I would look at that a little bit differently. Okay. So in the program of setting aside the funds and then committing those funds to carry out the specific projects, we actually are transferring that money, for example, to fiber. So the fiber system has the money to carry out the fiber build, as an example. So we have pre-funded those amounts out of the money set aside to ensure that we can complete those projects. So I look at this as we have pre-funded these projects, even though the work may not be carried out until the next couple years, we still have the funding set aside so that they will be funded.
Well, there's two different blocks of $2.8 million there. You know, what the 2017, I understand, was we're already committed.
Oh, thank you.
The other one is the remainder,
uh-huh.
Which that's what I was referring to.
Oh, thank you. And that is the one that I want to put a pin in just for a second, and then we'll take a quick look at 2017 and come back and talk about that. Oh, thank you. I misunderstood your question.
So I need some help on this too. I probably missed it, Kelly, but so that total, $5,202,000, including what's planned in 2017?
Right.
So does that take into consideration that we are going to put some of these on hold? For example, splash pad, the $130,900 forecast for 2016, are we are going to spend that? And that's,
yes.
No, that amount is included.
Yes, so for the ones that we're putting on hold, it does include the total amount that we have spent on them to complete this phase of the studies around them.
But so we have spent the $130,900.
Yes.
Okay, and the same for Okay, so like for number 8, utility focused ed programs, 15. That one I'm clear on because that total is for a 2-year limited assignment. All right, so that does include the programs that we're putting them on hold and not allocating anymore for 2017.
Correct. So those will be future decisions that we can make as part of the program. But what we have in the kind of the accounting here is what we have spent on those. And then for the few that are still active, what we expect to spend on.
Which would include the Horan area rehab work.
Right, because there's still active work from the initial scope of work to be done on that. Both the splash pad work and the visitor center work, this phase of the work is complete. The next decision-making phase is what's still to come. But that would be made out of a future funding period, and that's what we're going to talk about in a couple slides.
Perfect. Thank you.
Does that help too?
Well, yeah, we'll get there.
Okay.
So I'd like to add one other thing. I think what these amount to, the $5.2 million, is either work that's already completed or work that we know we are going to do based on conversations that we've had with the board, where we are going to be proceeding with certain activities, fiber being the best example of very clear direction from the board to proceed with that. The underspend here, to a large extent, is because we were able to accomplish things for less than what we originally budgeted for. So the state park waiver, we had budgeted at a number substantially higher than the amount that we actually spent. The economic development analysis tool, I think we had budgeted about $250,000, thinking that we were going to have to develop the tool. And then we found somebody who actually had the tool, and we were able to contract for it for about $40,000. So we've been able to get the progress that you were looking for just at less cost than what we had originally expected.
Yeah, that makes sense. So the underspend is not the change in philosophy or the change in looking at early action credit and pulling back on some things or putting some things on hold. It's more just a reflection of savings.
It could be some of both. I wouldn't say either or. I mean, we had the option to be able to proceed with some of these other activities like the splash pad, and at the moment we're holding back on those. But there's a substantial amount here that's just that we expected certain of these activities to cost more than they have as we've gone through the implementation phase.
Okay, thank you.
And the one other thing I would just couple in with that also is, and it was a startup phase, so there were some unknowns around as we get into this, what can be accomplished in this period of time. So I think that also is a factor in just the overall execution of the program for this startup phase. So taking a quick look at the 2017 funding that was established this summer. So again, we want the program to be sustainable and affordable and financially prudent. So to set aside this funding amount for 2017, we did wait until actual results were done for last year. We looked back at the actual results and looked at what amount of financial results exceeded the required amounts for our financial policies. And then we also looked forward to see what future commitments we have for those financial results, and then took a small percentage of that difference to set aside for funding for 2017. That's the $4 million amount selected by the board. And of that amount, $2.1 million has been allocated to the continuation of fiber expansion. This will be in addition to the amounts that were set aside before. Also, $71,000 for waiving the day-use park fees, which is now program, no longer a pilot. And then $30,000 for a BB Bridge park camping pilot. That is a pilot to test out adding a camping element to a free camping element to that program.
Question.
And then that leaves the 1.8 still unassigned.
Okay, so question on the BB Bridge Park camping pilot. So that $30,000 is the total cost for running the pilot program for 1 year.
Correct. Estimated.
So no commitment for a future for the next year.
Correct. It's just the 1 year pilot.
So that is the thought that the initial pilot is going to cost more than to continue and sustain that program? Or do we have we done the
So we will do the pilot next year, and that will help inform us of the actual cost to carry it out. And then after being informed with some of that information, then there would be another decision point about whether to continue beyond that. And the actual cost to carry it out would be one of the items, I think, that would go into the decision making.
So again, my concern being that once you start something, and we're calling it a pilot, but once you start a program like this, it'd be tough to pull back. Once the toothpaste is out of the tube, it's hard to put it back, but you know, that was always my concern, so we'll see where it goes.
I think that concern is still an element of the overall program, even itself, but it is designed as that annual decision-making.
So, Kelly, let me sort of understand clearly what you've just presented to us. I'm looking back at the previous page and saying, for 15 and 16 and those expenses that come out of that those buckets for expense in 17, we have a remainder of 2.8 million and flipping to this page, 2017, this is a new funding cycle, an additional 4 million, and of that we have 1.8 million unassigned.
Correct. Okay. So two different funding buckets. Mm-hmm. And the 2017 one is kind of the one that we'll be working with next year. Mm-hmm. The first one, the 2015 to 16, is actually what I wanted to talk about next, of how do we close out that funding period and what are the next steps around that. And so does that seem like good timing to move on to that question? So it really is now all the questions that you've been having, if we have an amount from the initial allocations that wasn't allocated to a specific project or needed to carry out the ones that were. So it's kind of the amount that's remaining. Since we're in this learning development phase of this program, we haven't done a closeout of an initial period yet to know exactly the process around this that we want to do. So to try to figure out where do we go from here? How do we handle the closeout of a period? I did go back to the strategic plan. One, as an example, this isn't just a document that we sat on the shelf and that we never look at again. You can see mine's earmarked and a little bit worn, because it's really a great document to give us that guidance of what the philosophy was at the time that we did some of these things. And so around public power benefit, the board philosophy, I think, is really helpful to help us think about how do we close out this year. And in the strategic plan, it did have a board philosophy laid out about how to develop and administer this public power benefit program, wanting it to be responsive, so reflective of the views expressed by our customer owners, wanting it to be financially sound. So to remain financially sound, the board would evaluate all the public power benefit decisions in the context of their impact on the PUD's financial health. Wanted it to be manageable, so not to create a complicated program or process that absorbs staff resources better used elsewhere, and so that each year the public power benefit would be newly determined. Have it be measured, and this was our let's crawl before we walk, walk before we run. So we're very methodical and deliberate in developing the program. Sustainable, recognizing that every year may not be possible, but to have a program that could be sustainable. Have it be consistent but realistic, so also not the peaks and valleys. And have it be aligned with other existing philosophies and policies. So when I read that, I thought, again, that helps helps as a foundation for us as we think about what are our options now that we're at the end of this initial funding period. Some of the options that are in the forefront are just to consider it complete as is. That was our startup period. Prudent pilot period can mean that we executed the specific projects as they were identified, and the remainder amount is just the remaining amount. And we close it out as is with a reporting of what was spent. And then each year hereafter, we make an annual decision about funding. And when I say we, I probably should say, and the board makes an annual funding decision. So it doesn't eliminate anything. It just, as we make each decision, we make it based on the financial viability within that year of our funding decisions and carry out, I think, the philosophies as I just read out of the plan. So that's what I have listed as option number one. Option number two is to take a look, though, at that remainder amount and consider if there are amounts that the board wishes to allocate to new or existing projects on the list out of that funding source. And then those would go into the, you know, work to be carried out in the future. And as board members, you may also have other ideas of options for how to close out this period. So really the next step in this is to have that open discussion. There, I don't think there is a one way to do this as we are developing this program. So with that, I'd like to just open it up to the board.
Mr. Bowles.
So if we look at, you know, things considered complete as is, so for 2015 and 2016, we have 2.8 million remainder. So that 2.8 has to go somewhere in the accounting process.
It's
real money. It's covered. So what we're really discussing is where does the 2.8 go?
Actually, I would think of it as if it was any project that we operate around here and the actuals are different than the forecast amount. So if we were building a turbine and we had projected it would cost $8 million and it costs $5.2 million, the $2.8 million doesn't go anyplace. It's just the $5.2 million is the number that becomes the actual and it's then determined.
So it remains in the general fund?
Yes.
Unearmarked?
Yes.
Okay, because I was somewhat operating under the public benefit as pardon the expression, is earmarked funds. And so it has a life of its own. But what I'm hearing you say, Steve, and what I am seeing you, Kelly, nod to, is that it would be not an earmarked fund. It's the remainder then is just simply a remainder as it would be in any other project.
So here's another way.
And I'm just looking for clarification.
Yeah, so here's the way I would describe that to try to answer your question. So the $8 million initial funding amount was an up to amount. You did have specific funding that was earmarked for the projects listed out. And then the amount that wasn't earmarked actually reduces the expense in our forecast for the year because we did spend less than we forecasted. So our results will be better. And our cash balance will be a little bit higher because we didn't spend that cash. So when we go to the next year to look at the public power benefit for that annual decision making, when we look back to actual results for last year, those results will be better and those cash balances will be higher. That would factor into then our calculation for so what is available for a public power benefit for this next annual decision making. So it influences because the results are better, holding it in a vacuum. The results would be better. And when we look forward to future forecasts of financial needs, then it does factor into the annual decision of what's available each year. So I think I would describe it as it influences the calculation for what's available for the next annual decision-making period for public power benefit.
As part of the overall net revenue calculation.
Okay.
The overall financial status.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's not something that had a place and it still stays in that place over time.
So it's not a standalone.
It's not for the amount that was never allocated to a specific project. It is for the amounts that were allocated to specific.
But philosophically, it still has somewhat of a placeholder. And I'm using non-accounting terms, thank God. But
I think
it's like talking with an engineer. You got to help me here.
Okay. I think that that could somehow be a consideration, but that's not what I'm describing with the kind of complete as is. In the complete as is, we close out the period, and that was right. The spending. And then each period thereafter is a brand new standalone period itself. So you reconsider each year what's available and what choices you make, but it isn't. It doesn't have a carry forward building of past amounts.
Not even philosophically.
Not even philosophically.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think, can I add to that? I think there, we had some conversation about this when the strategic plan was adopted, because we had a reservation about developing an accounting system that would try to track public power benefit dollars separately from everything else. Just the work that would go into trying to track it. And then secondly, what would it mean to have a reserve account that was tied to public power benefit when you're doing things like selling bonds and trying to show how much financial reserves you have? Are those, in what way are those counted? Are they counted somehow as if they are not available to the utility, if they were necessary to cover the fundamental costs of the utility? So for that reason, the list of objectives that Kelly read a moment ago included one about concern about the how we would manage public power benefit dollars and trying to avoid trying to establish new accounting systems that would may be necessary if you allowed carryover to be.
Right. No, I'm just trying to go back and remember and understand for decision making.
Mm-hmm. And you. I think that was where this annual calculation of what can we afford this year and making that decision each year, where you are incorporating past results because you are looking for what we have in the bank, what we've already earned and put in the bank. But we still make that kind of affordability calculation each year.
Mr. Congdon.
Okay, so to keep this moving, so I support number one, complete as is. However, you as an accountant, record that in the books. I totally trust, you know, that's not for me to, but I definitely support number one and not number two. I'm comfortable. It gives me some comfort that, first of all, that we do have some leftover monies that can go into the general fund. Because for a couple of reasons. One is the early action credit, the impact of that. And then the second thing is, you know, I'm still thinking about the facilities plan that we're looking at and the huge amount of money, the huge number of dollars that we're going to have to spend on our aging facilities. So I'm really happy, for one, that we're pulling back on some of these projects, and for those two reasons. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I don't want to dominate the microphone. So if I look at number two, in referencing what Commissioner Congdon has just talked about, facilities planning, you know, one of the things that we have heavily committed to, which came out of our strategic planning, is the, you know, refurbishing maintenance of our, you know, our equipment, our, just our existence in terms of, and so obviously our buildings, our facilities need attention. So there could be created a new, if I'm reading number two, could be, allocation of a new project, which would be facilities planning, and that 2.8 could go there.
So our facilities planning is part of our core work. Yeah. So I wouldn't, when I describe the public power benefit, I don't think we would describe it as we set aside money out of public power benefit program to do facilities planning. But I do think we would say we closed out the year as is with funding remaining, because we do have a knowledge that funding may be needed elsewhere for core work, mm-hmm. for things like facilities planning, and then do the designation of funding for facilities planning outside of the program, but still a connected decision-making, knowing that we have these things we're facing. And that's where the determining the amount for public power benefit when we look back and we look forward, because things like facilities plans may change our minds about what we can afford for this program as we go into the future. So to answer your question, I think I'm describing it as it's two standalone decisions, but but we can make both of those decisions standalone. And I think knowing that you have the facilities planning commitments coming up does help with decision making about what to do with closing out this program. Does it influence it?
And I'd like to suggest this is the second and possibly the third time that we've heard the board raise the concern about facilities planning. And I think I'd like to take a takeaway assignment to think about how we might develop a reserve fund to address facilities planning. Mm-hmm. Just based on your input, it sounds like there's an interest there in the board and thinking that through. So what about if we take that as an assignment to how would we put that together? How does it work? How does it work relative to our other reserve funds? And be able to give you a thoughtful response to that.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate that. And kind of where I'm coming from is just conversations in the public that there's been a desire on the public to create specific funding for public power benefits, highest priority being maintenance in operations. And I understand but the public has spoken in terms of these funds. And so it's, to me, it's a communication tool. And if the $2.8 million rolls into essentially the general fund and it's considered later as, that's not as clear a pathway. And I know, and I'm talking philosophically here, not the practicality of accounting. I'm just talking about conversations I've had with people. So they say, if you're not spending that all, is there not another need that's in the maintenance of operations category where those dollars could be seed money? So I'm just saying, I'm just representing what I've heard us from constituents.
Yeah, and I actually think that part of this discussion here supports exactly what you're saying. It's just keeping the spending kind of in different defined buckets, and that the public power benefit program is after is money that's set aside right after already doing those other things.
Right.
And so how you're describing it is we know we need to set aside more for doing some of those other things. So this one, which is the priority down the list from those, we're making some choices about maybe not spending all we thought we were going to there because we know we need to spend it in that higher priority area. So I think that's actually the same ultimate end result. It's just the way we describe it to get to the result.
Correct. And I know we're starting to run a little bit short on time. Do you have any comment, Gary? I just thought I'd try to bridge the communication gap that I sense here. I once had a logger friend describe the two different types of personalities, one being a lumper and one being a splitter. And what you're talking about is lumping, and what Dennis is talking about is splitting, I think. And I think we're on the same page, but how we communicate to the public is really good. Since nobody brought up my pet project in here of maybe taking half of that $4 million that hasn't been spent and putting it into a 2018 fiber expansion, I won't bring it up. So.
Yeah, right.
But that's where category two comes from, either new or existing projects.
Right.
So
well, just
so just a reminder that we still have the 1.8 roughly million mm-hmm. for 2017
correct
allocated, and a 2018 right amount as well, which we currently, at least in our long term forecast, assume would still be at the $4 million
right
level. So there will be opportunities to be able to pursue some of these other projects with the funding that is currently budgeted and forecast.
Yeah, and all I'm saying is that it's pretty clearly spoken to that number one is at least some in some minds the favorite consideration, and I'm saying from this commissioner, number two is the favorite position. That's the horse I'd want to put my money on.
And again, we can come back and give a couple weeks for additional soak time and come back at the next meeting and revisit this. And I think I'm feeling like that is the will of the board to come. Let's have a couple weeks of soak and come mm-hmm. back and talk about it again. Okay.
Okay.
So that is how we'll finish out is we'll come back. We left this open for our next step so we can make sure and adapt, and we'll come back and revisit, have more discussion after some more soak time at the next meeting. And then our look forward to 2017 is that we'll continue to monitor for some of the projects that are waiting for some other things to happen, the early action credit. We'll complete planned projects, which again are projects out of both funding buckets that we'll be continuing on. And then also working on continuous improvement of the program, including even processes around closeout, but really developing those internal processes. And that's what one of Micah's challenges that he will lead for next year. So just to keep that thought going, and then we'll see you next time.
Yeah, and you know, Micah, just welcome to actuarial experience and working with the board. And one is probably pretty solid, and the other one's pretty capricious. So,
so along the lines of coming back and the what you talked about 2017, looking for early action. Don't want an answer today, but if credit for early action becomes a reality, how many of these projects then move out of the public power benefit program arena?
That's a good question.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up, we want to celebrate a couple of significant accomplishments, and I want to invite Greg Carrington to come up and start off with that.
Everybody left the room.
Won't take that personally.
The effect you have
on people. Don't take it personally.
Just try hard not to personalize that.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Greg Carrington, Managing Director of Energy Resources, and I'd like to acknowledge a person that I personally and professionally respect. This person volunteers to take on new assignments all the time. You don't need to ask twice. He always does more than expected. In this case, he's being recognized for being a leader in conservation energy efficiency. He volunteered to lead over 40 people to develop the top objectives or goals for the Northwest Energy Efficiency Alliance, or NEA as we know it, and for consumer products. These consumer products are the things that our customers use every day in their lives. It helps them save money and energy. And so I'd like to read for you the details associated with the award. The regional efficiency community participates in the nomination of NEA awards, and a panel of Northwest energy and utility leaders select the winners. The award recognizes the outstanding achievement in collaboration, innovative solutions, achievements that have significantly contributed to the greater energy efficiency of the Northwest. And so the award winner for this was Andrew Gassell, so I'd like him to come up. He has received from NEA Leadership and Energy Efficiency Award for collaboration.
Here it is. I'll read it for those in the audience. Leadership in Energy Efficiency Award, the Award for Collaboration, Andrew Grissel, Chelan County PUD, and Jeff Tripp of Puget Sound. Congratulations.
You're supposed to show it.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
That's not my report.
That's why you married Suzanne.
Exactly.
Yeah. Congratulations, Andrew.
Okay, and next up we have a very special award, and I would like, if I could, to ask Commissioner Bowles, who's a past president of the Washington Public Utility District Association, to describe the importance of this award.
Thank you. The State PUD Association presents a specific award every year for an exemplary employee or a person who has dedicated a level of service beyond And they can be an employee, they can be a commissioner, but you have to be associated with a PUD. Where this really comes from is a gentleman by the name of William T. Elmgren, who was a commissioner, then an employee of Clark County PUD for over 40 years. And upon his passing, his family, to honor his concept of service and dedication of service and what it means to be a person in the public is the basis for this award. And being a past president, I had the opportunity to sit on a committee this year. And it's a little bit, can be a little bit awkward because we had one of our employees nominated for this award, but yet I'm a commissioner for this utility. The thing that was really, I think, enlightening is one of the other people on the awards committee immediately said, there's no competition here. The person that I think we need to recognize is Scott Erickson from Chelan County PUD. The other person on the committee immediately joined in, and it was a great moment to be part of the course without having to lead that. It was very evident by Scott's work, by how well written the description of Scott's work was done by our staff, presented well, and exemplified the effort that Scott has made. So it's my privilege on behalf of the Washington Public Utility Districts Association to ask our president to present to Scott the Community Service Award for 2016.
Do we have a video we want to watch?
We have a video.
Customer service area has that great ability to take people's concerns, their angst, their things that would motivate them to contact the PUD to heart, and to be able to respond to those customer concerns always in a defendable format, never in a defensive format, and always puts the customer first. It's just been a pleasure to have Scott as part of our organization for the number of years that he's been here, and he's going to be sorely missed. The other thing that I think people need to know about Scott is his work in the community is absolutely outstanding. It's amazing to me that the man has the time to do all the things that he does to make the city of Wenatchee and Chelan County a better place for everyone concerned. Scott, thanks for a job well done.
So Scott, before I present this award to you, I understand you have a couple of co-workers that would like to make a few comments.
No worries.
Yeah, now you're in trouble.
Yeah, what a wonderful video. Imagine our staff had a little something to do with that. As you know, Scott Erickson has actually announced his retirement this March. I've been trying hard to figure out ways to entice him to stay a little longer, but he's heading out. And what a wonderful cap to put on his career with this award. And so very proud of Scott. You know, our time here at the district, whether we're a commissioner or an employee, it's a very short time. It goes by fast. And I think it's important for us all to take a pause and think in terms of how do we want to be remembered when we leave the organization. Well, when Scott leaves, from my perspective, he will be remembered as the person who built bridges, not walls, between our customers, our community, and the PUD. The bridges were built on trust, transparency, a lot of humbleness, a lot of empathy for customers, and a passion on Scott's part for doing the right thing every day that he comes to work. So Scott's loyalty to the community and our customers will always be remembered, and the William T. Elmgren Award of 2016 is representative not of just 1 year, but of an entire career of working for our customers. Thanks, Scott. Your contributions have made our community a better place to live and have definitely made Chelan County PUD a great place to work.
Nice job, Andy. I'll be brief because, you know, I could talk a lot about Scott. We've been in the trenches over the years, and you know, as the video has shown and his body of work, he's always been there for the district. But there's an analogy I always use with Scott. It's, you know, he's Jupiter. He's out there in the solar system, and he's taking on all these issues. And, you know, there's probably been thousands of issues that Scott just deals with. We're going to miss that. That's hard to replace. So hopefully his spirit and his can-do attitude lives on, and it's been a real pleasure working with Scott and learning from Scott. Gonna miss you.
Thank you very much. This is a very humbling award. When you do things, you don't want the recognition. This is very nice, but when you do things for your community, you do it because it feels right. It's the good thing to do, and it's what everybody should do. I just want to make sure that everybody that I've worked with... maybe some of me rubs off on you. That's good. Just try and go out and give back to your community. Life has been good to us. The PUD is an excellent place to work. You've got community. You've got friends. You've got coworkers. So make sure that you pay that back. Go out to the community and do that. Thank you.
For those who don't know, I'm especially going to miss Scott. We get together, you know, every commission meeting down in the back step and solve the world's problems.
Yes, we do.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you all very, very much.
And by the way, we do have cake. We can't have an occasion without cake. So for both award winners, so stick around if you're hungry.
We do have a microphone. If anybody else in the public wants to say anything, you're welcome to come up.
Since there is cake available, anybody want to say anything before? Since there is cake available.
I just have one thing to say, and that, you know, when I see Scott, I think I said this to you, didn't I, Scott? I asked him, Scott, is there ever a time when you're not smiling? No. I've never seen Scott not smiling. That's a beautiful trait. That's wonderful.
Since there's a beautiful chocolate cake over there, we would normally try to cram a little more business in here, but I think the business at this moment in time is cake, and we'll reconvene at 1 o'clock. Good afternoon. Welcome to the 1 p.m. business session of the December 5 Chelan County Public Utility District meeting. I want to welcome everybody to the meeting, and we met this morning in study session, and we're now here for the business session. I'd just like to provide a reminder for everybody that's in the room that if you wish to speak to any item on the agenda, if you'd come to the front, use the portable microphone and give us your name and address for the record as we are recorded. We would really appreciate that, and please silence your cell phones. The first item on our agenda this afternoon is the consent agenda, and commissioners, this morning, the recommendation of the commissioners, we added resolutions 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16 to the consent agenda. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda as amended?
Mr. Chairman, I move to approve the consent agenda as amended.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda as amended. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. We are now on to the regular agenda and resolution number 10 dealing with the district budget.
Well, we come to the end of a very long process here today. Resolution 10 is a resolution approving the 2017 district budgets for the fiber network, water, wastewater, and integrated electric distribution, transmission, Columbia River Rock Island Hydroelectric, Lake Chelan Hydroelectric, Rocky Reach Hydroelectric Systems, Treasury Services, Internal Service Systems, and Financing Facility Business Lines. Mark O'Brien will be giving you an update based on what's changed just since the last presentation, and then we have a resolution that I'm going to speak to just quickly after Mark is finished.
Thank you, Steve. Mark O'Brien, Director, Strategic Financial Planning, here today to present the final proposed budget for 2017. First thing I would do is just address a couple changes that were incorporated into the budget since the November 21st presentation. We went out and updated our wholesale forecast to the most recent view of the market conditions. That was as of November 22nd. The operating expenditures remained unchanged. Capital expenditures, some slight revisions to the annual budget for 2017. Again, those revisions were less than 1% to the overall capital plan for 2017. Overall, the budget remains materially the same as was presented before. The bottom line results remain within 1% of what was presented on November 21st. Again, just to review, a quick slide that identifies our major revenue categories and major expense categories. Again, remaining consistent with the prior presentation and slightly better than what we presented back in September as part of the five-year business planning process. Currently, we're just above $85 million as far as an overall bottom line expectation for next year. In addition to that view, we also include a total expenditure view when we present the budget resolution. This identifies operating expenditures, taxes, non-operating activity, which would be your interest expense item primarily, as well as our overall capital plan, net of any contributions that would offset those expenditures. Total expenditures for 2017 are currently proposed in the current budget for about $289 million, and that is up slightly compared to last year, primarily due to additional capital spending at Rock Island. In addition, the district is planning further debt reduction, which we're looking at a net reduction of over $52 million. So that's another expenditure. Again, all of those expenditures are to be funded through existing reserves or ongoing operating revenues. So that's just a quick overview of the district's 2017 budget. Associated with that budget is a quick review of the associated financial policies for the district. Again, noting that we're well in excess of meeting all the established targets for 2017. Annual results for rate of return, well in excess of the 4% combined cover related to our debt portfolio, well above the 2 targeted amount. Liquidity in excess of the 178 calculated minimum for 2017. And debt ratio, we are on the path, continue to be on the path to get down below 35%. And that's currently projected to be in 1 year in advance of the 2019 target. It will be about 38% by the end of next year. Again, just noting that the 2017 budget process took into consideration the strategic plan priorities established, those focusing on reinvesting in assets, people as the highest priority, continuing the reduction of debt, as well as continuing the public power benefit program, which includes the the expansion of the fiber program. That's just a quick overview of the 2017 budget and just the small changes, and I will turn it back over to Steve.
Commissioners, I think that you've spent a fair amount of time on this, and you hopefully have a good understanding of the underlying numbers here. I do want to call out that we have drafted the resolution in a manner a bit differently than what we've done in the past, recognizing the conversations that we've been having over the course of the last many months. Since the strategic plan was adopted, we have seen the biggest issue has been declining revenues from the wholesale power market as those prices have fallen. We've also seen some increase in costs as a result of just the issues associated with maintaining our assets. But of the two, clearly the declining revenues is the most significant issue. We did, of course, spend a lot of time going through the long-term debt philosophy and providing a lot of analysis of what those changes mean for us. And I think we can conclude that the strategic plan continues to serve us well. But the fact of the matter is we are proposing to do one thing differently here. And because it is different from the strategic plan, we have included it specifically in the resolution. And that's to say we had three priorities in the strategic plan: investing in assets and people, reducing debt, and initiating a public power benefit program. They were not described as having any differentiation in terms of priorities. This resolution does make clear that investing in assets and people will be our number one priority, reducing debt is our number two priority, and the public power benefit program is our number three priority. Because they are still priorities, we could continue to pursue them, and there is funding provided here for all of those activities, but it's helping to create more clarity for us in terms of if we continue to see declines in the wholesale power market, how do we manage amongst the priorities that were established in the strategic plan. So I wanted to call that out to your attention because it is different from what we have done in previous years. With that, I turn it back over to the board.
Commissioners, questions for staff or comments? Commissioner Arsenault.
I have a question. What is our current debt ratio as we're closing out 2016?
The ratio for end of this year is targeted to be about 54%, I believe.
I'm sorry?
54%.
54%. Thank you.
Well, I just have a comment as long as you have that slide up there. every single one of those financial targets, we more than exceed almost by double in some cases. So terrific, terrific job. Unbelievable. Great work by all the financial folks.
Thank you.
Yep.
Gary, Mr. Arsenal, correction. I looked at the wrong number. It's actually 43% for the end of this year.
Great. Thank you.
With that target for this year being getting below 50% was the actual target for 16.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments for staff? Any member of the audience?
you know, I just think, first of all, Mark, you know, one of the things I like about our process is that every time you come back every 2 weeks, the presentation gets shorter, which is a refinement process, but thank you. You know, and it is a much clearer and well presented. The other thing, and I would like to just echo what Commissioner Congdon has said, that, you know, when you attend state association meeting, you're with 27 other counties, and I look at a lot of what they're going through financially, and I look at our resources and our ability to provide for our ratepayers what we're able to. It's a privilege to be at Chelan County PUD and all the efforts made by everybody to create the revenue and to work on the projects and to do the right thing for the people that own it. And there's not a more privileged spot than this one. Thank you all to everyone.
Well, I'd like to, in another vein, echo Commissioner Bowles' comments. It is a pleasure and a privilege, and I recognize the last three budget cycles we have, as a commission, attempted to really listen to what the senior management has brought to us through the whole planning process and budget, which includes all the various departments, saying we have needs that are currently unmet. We're being pushed to take us to a place, and we need some resources, and management has brought that to us, and we have been able to respond. We're very fortunate that we're able to respond, and I hope that we can continue to respond, because I think all of us take a lot of pride here at Chelan in doing the job right for the people of Chelan County. And so thank you for your diligence and hard work, everybody out there. That's I know there's a lot of people that work on putting this product together. It's not just the people in the room.
No.
So, commissioners, I told Steve that I thought it was appropriate, this being the budget resolution, that we act on it separately from all of our other resolutions. And so, what is the desire of the commission on resolution number 10?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt Resolution 10 as presented.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to adopt Resolution 10, adopting our budget for the 2017 year as presented. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is carried. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Resolution 11.
Resolution 11 is a corrected resolution superseding and replacing resolution number 16-14074, which authorized final acceptance of performance under bid number 15-40 with Trenchless Construction Services, LLC of Arlington, Washington, and authorizing payment of retainage. You may recall this one was before you about a month or two ago. So Jeff Smith and Dan Frazier will be presenting this one.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Jeff Smith, Managing Director of District Services.
Dan Frazier, Director of Shared Services.
And as Steve indicated, this resolution does amend and correct the earlier resolution, July 13, 2015. The district entered into a unit price contract with Trenchless for underground conduit construction. On October 17, 2016, the board accepted the work as complete in the amount of $372,721. That dollar amount was incorrect. The correct amount is $329,417. That's about $43,000 less. And the lesson learned.
So our lesson learned, actually, we came up with a couple lessons learned from this experience. The first one is sounds pretty simple, but it's about diligence with numbers. When we're doing projects of this magnitude and complexity, there was 32 separate work assignments. The contract specialist that did the work did a great job of compiling everything, did all the calculations right, but in the end put the wrong number in the resolution. So that diligence of working through complex situations needs to carry all the way through to the end. So make sure we're reviewing, constantly checking ourselves that our numbers are right. But the larger lesson learned is really about our processes in resolution development and processes throughout our contracting world. So this... I've got my eyes opened, actually, as part of this, as I've had some discussions with our supply chain manager and our director of engineering project management, we've talked about how we process resolutions from development through review and on up to the board. And it's actually not very standardized. So we're taking a look at larger contract processes this year as a follow-up of a review we did in 2016. So this is getting added to the list of processes we need to further standardize so that there is kind of a gatekeeping process at the end to make sure that everything is checked before it comes up to legal for review and then finally to the board. So this event or this process review that we're looking at for next year, for well, the upcoming year, is really looking at a couple different areas. One is process improvements throughout the district, and which we're always making those improvements, but a lot are centered around standardization of our processes. People do things differently, but we want to make sure we're achieving the same goals of each of those. We're also looking at roles and responsibilities. We've had some other lessons learned this past year, and that made us think, I think there's some changes we can make and some improvements we can make to our process, and we're going to implement those lessons learned. And the third is some new training. Eric and I have talked about how are we training our newer staff on all these different processes. And we have some general contracting training, but we're going to do some more specific training about how we want to implement these standardization factors. So,
thank you. Any questions?
Just a comment. I really like these lessons learned. I think there's great, well, there's value for us, for sure, but probably even more value for you guys, for staff. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
I think when things go wrong, we're all accountable here in the management team, but I want to particularly thank Jeff and Dan for standing up here and recognizing that this isn't just, well, there was a one-off problem, but maybe there's a systems issue that we need to get after and work on. And the fact that they're already on it, I think, is a real testament to their commitment to operational excellence.
Thank you.
Thank you. And speaking of lessons learned, I'll ask you to step aside and we'll invite Vern up. There was one, the Mo asphalt that was approved in the consent agenda, and Vern had prepared a very good lessons learned, and ask him to come up and share that with you. It's about central management of task priorities.
Okay. This, of course, concerns the Mo contract that was approved by consent. This contract was used by EPM, water, transmission, distribution, NRD, and generation. Historically, there's been minimal central management of task priorities or keeping track of missing invoices. excuse me. All invoices come to EPM, and we confirm the contract compliance, and then we're forwarded to AP and then appropriate departments for approval. Invoices can sometimes arrive months late, and then when received all in one day, can overload staff to process. So we have developed a process, EPM, that will input task order information on a spreadsheet so they can be tracked. The spreadsheet will be updated by EPM and then can be communicated regularly with internal staff and the asphalt maintenance contractor to confirm agreement of work and invoice status. So we're hoping not to have, like last year, we had 50 invoices coming in in the month of December, and we had to process them before the end of the year. So we're just trying to keep more of a central management of this contract, because the entire district uses this particular contract and a number of other of our enterprise contracts. And it's important that somebody keep track of where we're all at. So it's just it's a process we're working on. And we're not done yet, but we're working on it.
I think about it. So it was a four-year contract, and there were nearly 300 call-outs over the period of that time for asphalt and concrete work. So it was difficult with all the departments and divisions using the same contract to make sure you have all the invoices in hand, they're being paid on a timely basis, and just the coordination. So Vernon and his group, EPM, you recall, is engineering and project management, and put together this new process. So it should work very well.
Good. I have to tell you, I am really, really impressed. We let you guys off the hook. We're on consent agenda, and you're so proud of the changes that you're finding that you're bringing to us anyway. That is cool. It really is. I mean, you know, it tells me that lessons learned is working and gaining steam within the organization. You guys are seeing the value. That's great.
Absolutely.
And that is transparency and accountability.
I bet.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Next up is Resolution 17. This is a resolution authorizing Amendment Number 1 to Services Agreement SA-TA Number 16-104 with BQS, Brazil Quality Services, LTDA, to provide inspection services. And Tim Dietering is going to present for us this morning.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. I'm Tim Dietering. I'm a project manager at Rock Island Dam for the Engineering Project Management Department. Brief background, because of the complexity and the size of the parts that we use for rehabbing our hydro-generating units, there are a limited number of vendors that can be utilized, and most of these happen to be international. Through the process, we come up with an inspection and test plan, which has specific points that we want to look at the fabrication and or the assembly of these parts to make sure that they are being done to meet our quality standards. To do that requires us to have our own inspection people show up to do inspection or to witness the inspections alongside the manufacturers. Since these are mostly, or not mostly, most of the, a lot of these are overseas, rather than spend the time and money and our engineers to send them over to do that, we contract this out to a company, in this case, BQS, which is Brazil Quality Services. And they find inspectors with the qualifications that we require that are indigenous to the location. So we have used them in the past on a number of occasions to the point now we have three separate service agreements with them. Two of those are about to run out of funds. One is for Rocky Reach B6, or I'm sorry, Rock Island B6, and the other is for Rocky Reach. So what we opted to do is take a look at our total need for the rest of the rehab projects at Rocky Reach, the modernization projects for B5 through 8, as well as the upcoming B1 through 4 inspection needs for the bid that's going to be going out later this month. And when we put all that together is why we decided to put that in a single contract, a service agreement with task authorization, so we have a single set of general requirements and a single set of rates. And so that's why we're seeking to add the funds for all of those projects to this single agreement, which is going to be spread out over the next 5 years, essentially from now to the end of 2021, when all those projects should be completed. So for that service, we're looking at adding $1.33 million to this service agreement, which would then be released on a project-by-project basis.
Any questions, commissioners?
So, yeah, so that won't have to come back to us. We approve the total amount, and then it just gets released.
That is correct.
Project by project.
Yes.
Yeah, that works. That's good.
Any other questions? The comment occurred to me, having visited Brazil recently, and somebody might wonder why we have to go all the way to Brazil, and you talked about the worldwide nature, but Brazil is in a class by itself when it comes to hydro development. They probably half of all the projects or more in the world on hydro are going on in Brazil right now.
Correct.
Really?
It's a huge hydro development area.
It is. Southeast Asia is another one that's very large and ongoing.
Yeah. So, any other questions, comments? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next up we have the two resolutions addressing the fees, charges, and policies. Number 18 is a resolution amending and restating the utility service regulations, and number 19, a resolution amending and restating the electric line extension policy and water wastewater line extension policy portions of the utility service policies. Kathy Melton is going to present for us.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Kathy Melton, Customer Service Program Analyst. And what we are presenting today are the two resolutions that are seeking adoption for the proposed changes that we previewed to you on the 21st. A resolution 18 is regarding the utility service regulations. Proposed changes included metering changes. We also had changes in load requirements for HDL customers, and then also a better defined course of corrective action that we would use with our backflow assemblies. And then Resolution 19 is concerning our electric line extension policy and the water wastewater line extension policy. Minor change in the electric line extension policy for the latecomers issue. And then with the water wastewater, it's shifting from a preset list of costs to an estimating on each individual project. And John and Andy did attend this morning's session and follow up on some of those questions that resulted on the 21st. Was there any further questions that you have for me?
Commissioners, any questions?
They did a good job.
They did.
Explaining it.
They Great. Did. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioners, we have four resolutions before us. Resolution 11, 17, 18, and 19. What is the wish of the commission?
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of resolutions 11, 17, 18, and 19.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve resolutions 11, 17, 18, 19. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. All right. Item 20 is commission items.
Randy, I do have one I'll mention. I know we're doing this by exception, but this was this is pretty timely, I think. so I will just mention it briefly. I attended the water meeting on Friday. That's the last day of our Washington PUD Association Christmas meeting. And so we met Friday from 9 until 2. And I would say the full session, all morning long, we discussed something that Eric, our attorney, and Steve Wright, and all of us have been discussing of late, and that's the most recent Hearst decision, Hearst versus Whatcom County, and it has to do with exempt wells. And I had received a phone call from a county commissioner who was really concerned because he was afraid potentially that we might have to, or the county might have to put a moratorium on building permits in rural areas because people might not be able to punch in these exempt wells. And that's not going to be the case. I want to assure everybody of that. But anyway, there was a lot of concern, and I'm sure one of the reasons there's concern is because there are some counties who have put a moratorium on building in rural areas. One is Spokane County, one is, Skagit, I believe, and Whatcom County. So this is something that's been an issue on the west side for a long time, and it's kind of coming our way. But we're working on this, and we're going to have a meeting. I'll let Eric explain what your next step is. But anyway, it was a very helpful meeting for me. Sarah Mack was there, who's an attorney who does a lot of work for us. And as I say, John Counts and the water attorney were all there, and we discussed for 4 hours. And then I actually got a ride from Raymond, Washington, back to Olympia with George Kahn, who's the director of Washington PUD Association. And again, I learned a ton from George Kahn. He came from Nevada, and they have water right wars, or had, still have water right wars in Nevada like none other. So he has a lot of experience in this area, and he imparted a whole bunch of great knowledge. And so we have lots of great resources, you know, with Eric and Sarah Mack and Karen, our attorney, George Kahn. So this is something that everybody's working on, and I feel better having had all the knowledge, all the information sharing on Friday. So Eric, will you take from there and just explain about the next meeting, or just let everybody know what we're doing next?
Sure, Commissioner. So the PUD staff internally here has developed a team, and we're having conversations with Department of Ecology. There was a meeting last Monday, the 21st, down in Yakima to begin to address some of the water rights issues up at Lake Chelan that we've been talking about over the past several years. You may remember there was a study commissioned by the county with a consultant, RH2, who also does some work for us several years ago. And so we're looking at that, doing some peer review work on that, and then we're trying to sit down with Ecology and talk through precisely how we develop a methodology to do accounting for water rights up in Lake Chelan. And the commission knows that the PUD holds paramount water rights at Lake Chelan for both the storage and ponding purposes, and then for the hydro generation right as well. And there's water that's reserved out of those water rights through an agreement with Ecology, approved by FERC, that makes water available for uses in the area. And we need to get a good handle on how much has been used and how much is left. So we're in that process. Our staff met with Ecology, reports that things went well. Ecology is in a position where they're now taking some of what we've given them and doing their own analyses. We don't know what that is yet. But we do have another meeting scheduled to follow up our next conversation with Ecology, and it's on January 18th, I believe. So more to follow after that. Have heard the concerns expressed by the county. Had a nice conversation with Mike Caputo over at the county on Friday. Understand that he's also been talking to Ecology, and I've seen some of that. But tomorrow, actually, Jeff Smith and I plan to attend the county commissioner's session. Mike Caputo invited us along at his usual time spot at 10:15 a.m., I believe. So we'll be attending there with the hopes of giving them basically the same update that I'm giving to you, and then addressing any concerns or questions that they might have to the extent we can. We obviously can't speak for Ecology, and Ecology is off doing their work, but we can share some of our perspectives. I'm hopeful for a nice visit, and ultimately at the end of the day, whenever that is, in this process, a favorable outcome that will be beneficial not only to the PUD and Ecology as the administrators of those rights. It's Ecology, by the way, that does administer those rights in the area, but also satisfies the needs of the larger stakeholder group, including the county and the residents of Chelan.
Yeah, thank you. So the work that we're doing with Ecology is not, as some thought it was, very adversarial, and it's not been that way at all. It's been we've had meetings with them, and it's been a really good, we've had good meetings, we've had good agreements. We're just going to, you know, play around with the numbers, but it's been a really good working relationship. And I might just add one more thing. The problem with what the Hearst decision basically said is that if you punch in an exempt well, if there's a hydrological continuity with a stream, then you are affecting the flow, fish flow in that stream. So, and so obviously concerned about all the on the west side, there are tons of exempt, many exempt wells that have gone in, and so people are raising a red flag about that. So that's, and there are many other decisions. There's a Foster decision. Eric probably could share with you all the different decisions that have been happening along the way to affect this. But we have a good group working on this, and we're here to help out, to serve the county, to help them, assure them that the water, there's going to be water available. And I do have one question, and somebody in here probably can answer that, because I need to share it with the public. When you talk about a number, say 7,000 acre feet of water, is there an everyday analogy we could share that to help people understand how much water that actually is? I bet Greg knows.
I don't have one.
It's a lot of water.
A lot of water.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. So it depends on how you want to present the information, but 7,000 acre feet, you know, like if you were going to use it over the course of the year, is equivalent to probably about 10 CFS a day. So it depends on how you're going to communicate it, or if you wanted to convert the acre feet into gallons. It depends on what you wanted to use it for. So what are you trying to convey?
How about we just take that away? And
let me suggest one thing that I think may help, because I think we had a little conversation at lunch that helped to clarify this for me. The context that this is occurring in is whether there would be a problem with adding new exempt wells. So the total amount of usage of acre feet of water of exempt wells in the Chelan Basin today is roughly around 200.
There we go.
And so
that's helpful.
You just be aware that even if there was an expansion on that, 200 is a relatively small number compared against the other issues that are being addressed as part of this discussion with Ecology.
Yeah, that puts it into a context that people can, you know, kind of get their arms around. Yeah.
That 7,000 is equivalent to that.
So I do, Commissioner, want to echo two important points. One, yes, we have a fantastic team working on this and working on it literally daily, and reiterate your statement that it is a correct statement to say that there is no adverse or conflictual relationship that I'm aware of between the district and, candidly, ecology or any other stakeholder at this point in time. Right. I think we're all working together. We're all in it together. So we're all trying to solve the problems the best way we can.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other commission items? Well, while you're thinking about it, I'll just remind everyone that we're approaching the end of the year. We talked about this before, but I'll remind you again that we will need to make decisions as to what outside organizations we commissioners will be representing. And I will share with you that I've had occasion to have a couple of conversations with Commissioner-elect McKenna to share with him all the variety of activities that we do. And of course, my recommendation to him at that point was, your first year, do them all. Or all that you can, just to create an awareness of what really does exist. But we'll need to be making those decisions so Sheila and Lisa can handle our needs. Also, my sense is with the new commissioner coming on board, we need to hold our commission elections on our first meeting in January. So the five sitting commissioners make that decision. So that's my only thoughts. We do have, we'll get to this, we have a need to set a couple of special meetings, but that can be under a different item.
How do you want to do associations? You want us to just let you know one-on-one?
For lack of better methodology, let me know what you want before the end of the year, and we'll see what plays out.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Could I suggest we go to manager items now, since we have some folks in the room?
Okay.
That we
can you bet.
Release if
you
we,
bet.
Let them come up. So I wanted to discuss the Sage Hills closure.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Vaughn Pope, Senior Wildlife Biologist for the district. And just wanted to update you that some things going on the home water property that we own and manage for mule deer. It was closed on December 1st, last Thursday, which in itself is not that remarkable, but what is to me is that's the 10th time that's occurred. So we signed the permit to give the city access across that property, secondary access, in 2007. So this is in fact our 10th. Closure of that, and that to me is a little bit startling, but it's actually gone well. The first few were rather difficult events for the community, I believe, but culture has changed, come around pretty well. We're grateful for our partners, the Shenandoah Land Trust, because they adopt our mandatory closure on their trails and trailheads that are the primary access to us. So that adoption effectively closes the western foothills here between Number One Canyon and Horse Lake Road from December 1st through March 31st each winter, and helps us meet the mandate that we have even on a much larger area for the community as a whole. Then we've also done a little bit of work up there, fire recovery. Two fires in 3 years up there has had an impact on the property. We're concerned a little bit about the conversion of the natural habitat to more annual type grasses and things. So we did a project with Pheasants Forever this year and did actually a pollinator project. It doesn't really have much to do with pheasants at all, but they were looking for properties that they can put pollinator plants on to improve pollinator success, something that's very important to us, particularly in this valley. So we put 1,000 plants in, some in the spring, some this fall, to improve and their native forbs to the area. So that'll help with the native diversity, we hope, over time, and it'll help with this pollinator process. And in 2017, we have a contract, an agreement with the Mule Deer Foundation. They're going to purchase 1,000 shrubs that we'll plant up on the property, a variety of shrubs that'll benefit the deer. Hopefully, in the long term, we need to start replacing a little bit of that shrub component that has been lost, particularly if we get some severe winters. That's what the deer are going to look to, along with the orchards, to survive. But
do look for the orchards.
Yeah. So we trying to provide that option up there. And then there's also, we still have a memorandum of agreement with the BLM with the Sleepy Hollow fire, because their property was impacted, and we're hoping that in 2017, maybe 18, we'll do some additional shrub plantings in cooperation with the BLM. So any questions about the home water property, trail closures?
Nope, I'm just hearing reports of deer downtown, so we know that the annual activities are happening. So
yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You're looking at me like maybe you're going to discuss pigeons?
Yes.
Oh, excellent. Okay, I wasn't quite sure. So yeah. Aline would like to give us an update on pigeons.
Good afternoon. Aline Underwood, Fish and Wildlife Manager. So I wanted to let the commissioners know that beginning this week, we're going to move ahead with having our contractor, the USDA, begin pigeon removal at Chelan Dam. So pigeons have become a nuisance there. Frankly, there's safety and health considerations to take into account. And to date, trapping efforts have been less than successful up there. So we've tried several methods to discourage the birds in the past, but we need to take more direct methods, similar to what we've done in the past at Rock Island Dam. And so beginning this week, and in addition to continuing to control or continued trapping efforts, the USDA will take pellet rifles to the dam to take the birds for sometime between now and through March as needed, roughly about 2 hours a day every other week as needed. So it's important to note that although at Rock Island Dam we do use shotguns and we contract with the USDA, they have the ability to use shotguns. They are exempt from local regulations for doing that. We're working in partnership with the city of Chelan. That's where Powerhouse Dam actually is within the city limits. And so we've decided to not use shotguns. We're only using pellet rifles. We want to maintain that relationship. So we sent out flyers last Friday. I think they went in the mail. We notified everyone within about 800 feet of the project that this would be occurring. We also had contact with city administrators, let them know this would be happening. So if any folks have any questions, they're directed to contact me or any of our staff in Fish and Wildlife.
So, Aline, you would have been absolutely fascinated by the first presenter we had Thursday morning in Vancouver from the Gates. I think he was on contract with the Gates Foundation, has his own company. They are setting up a perimeter around villages in Africa with a laser defense system, and the lasers are shooting mosquitoes out of the sky.
Specifically, because the wing pattern is different, the identifier can be the female wing. So they're actually discriminating in the extermination of the female mosquito and not taking the males.
And this is all for malaria elimination.
Malaria-carrying mosquitoes, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we do use lasers at our facilities, too. Not for mosquitoes, mind you.
You could use them for pigeons, maybe.
Yeah, we do use them for pigeons, but they're not really effective at this particular dam.
Well, this one is a lethal production.
They had an amazing photograph showing the wings being essentially
cut off,
vaporized, or from the female mosquito.
So they actually had to turn it down. They can actually intensify or de-intensify the laser beam because they just want to kill them. They don't want to necessarily vaporize them for whatever reason. I don't know.
So. Thought you'd be interested knowing that you're in the pigeon business.
This gentleman was a hacker. He started hacking when he was about 10 years old, and he took his hacking abilities from, you know, I mean, he was just thought differently. He turned it from doing bad things to good things, which is trying to save millions of children from, and many other worthwhile projects.
Yeah.
It's pretty fascinating.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Next up, you know, we've struggled with the staters at the C8 through 11 project, and we have an update for you that we want to provide on that Kirk Hudson is going to provide.
Kirk Hudson, Managing Director of Generation Transmission. As you know, we have been challenged with large units at Rocky Reach, and our latest is just Sunday the 27th. We had C11 experience a high temperature smoke alarm. That unit is the first one that we found problems with on the stators back in 2014. We made some repairs at that time. it's been running ever since. And since then, 8, 9, and 10 have experienced failure. So second time around for C11, we haven't had a full opportunity to do a full, we just did a visual inspection. We got two units. The good news is we got two units back up and running. One was down for overhaul last week, and we actually have rewound one of the generators on one of the large units. C10 just came back online December 1st. So we got that one back up just in time for this one to go down, unfortunately. Over the next couple of weeks, we'll be doing a much more thorough analysis of where we're at with C11. It's quite possible this one could be down until we rewind it, which would be later next year. So we'll let you know more if something changes, but that's the latest and greatest with the large units. So as we speak right now, we've got three of the four that are down.
Kirk, you might remind us that you've already procured stators, as I recall.
Yeah, so these are the units where we expedited the delivery of the units. We have materials for three of the four as we speak, here or en route. The fourth one is yet to be here, but we will have these in time for us to get to work when we can, as soon as possible. We won't be delayed by the material arriving here. It's mainly head gates at this point and the amount of work we have on preparing C8 and getting 9 back up and running. So yeah, that was one of the risk mitigation strategies, was recognizing these units. And I think this just does confirm what we thought all along, was the life remaining on these stators is very limited. This is the second time around with this one.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kirk.
I want to do a quick update on Alcoa. We did conclude all of the paperwork necessary to assign the contract just last week. There was a huge amount of detail that had to be put in place in order to bring that to conclusion. Kelly Boyd led that effort, Eric heavily involved, including during his vacation, to so-called vacation, to make sure that we got all of the pieces of paper in hand that we needed to, and we've confirmed that with Alcoa that we're done with that step, which will mean that probably in the next month or two, we'll begin the conversations with them about where do we go with restart, or where will they go with restart is probably the best way to put it. So I know that they are still, they had a lot of contracts they had to do to make the assignments complete, and I know that they're just finishing up with all that work, and they're catching their breath right now, but it won't be long before we'll move on to the next conversation, we suspect. Any questions about that? Okay. I want to give you a quick update on a public event that's coming up. Oh, I'm sorry. Lorna is going to. That's right.
Hello, Lorna Klemanski, Managing Director of Human Resources and Safety. Commissioner Bowles earlier asked for information about the Educational and Community Engagement Coordinator, and this is your first update. So the first outreach event being coordinated by Mario Cantu will be a Decembrina Fiesta, that's holiday festival, and that'll be in partnership with La Nueva Radio, that's a local Spanish language radio station. La Nueva will be broadcasting the event that's being held in the evening on Sunday, December 18th in the auditorium. The event will provide an opportunity for PUD staff to interact face-to-face with customer owners from the Hispanic Latino community, and provide education and information about our various programs, such as the energy conservation, environmental stewardship, the day use passes, provide information on upcoming job opportunities and the advantages of power pay, for example. So staff members from various business units will be participating in the event. And we will also use this as an opportunity to conduct a survey to gauge the knowledge of that community with our various programs, and set benchmarks to see how we're doing with getting our message out to that community, so we'll be able to assess later on what our success has been. And Mario will come back later and update you on other things in the future that we get going on. But this one came together pretty quickly, so thought we'd let you know about that.
Thank you. That's it for our manager items today.
All right. Commissioner Travel.
Thank you.
Hello, Lisa Sanders, Admin and Finance. You'll notice this is 2017. There's no more 2016 travel, unless I missed something. I don't think so. So, we have rooms booked for January Waputa. And
are we transferring those to the DoubleTree?
I'm going to check in on that.
Okay.
What's the name of the new hotel, Dennis? The one that was just
Home Suite
remodeled. Something Home Suite.
Town Suites.
Town Suites. Is that not on our list?
Expensive.
Oh, it's become more expensive.
Just for this event, it's got. I mean, they've got a huge rate bump. Just for the January, and that's why we're going through gyrations.
Yeah, there has not been a fully negotiated Waputa rate with them, and they wouldn't change for January, and neither did Waputa.
Yeah, it's been super fun.
Yeah, it's created a lot of
super fun,
a lot of effort.
Lisa, I'm going to move to the DoubleTree. You want me to just
for January?
For January, I can do that.
Call
if you want.
I'll see if I can move all of you. Is that fine? We can get the 103.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Yep.
That'd be fine. Yes.
Okay. Because the governor is 99 or 103.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you talked to the director of sales again, or should I call him?
No, you should. I haven't talked to him since I was in.
Okay. I'll give him a call.
A few weeks ago.
Okay. Yeah. So I'll talk to him and see if I can get. He'll give us the 103 for all of the Olympia.
And if you won't, we can stick our travel manager, Gary Arsenault, on him.
Oh, I will let him know.
Yeah.
I'm sure that he's heard about you.
Fear and trembling.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I will look into moving that to the DoubleTree and booking February there as well. February for the Legislative Rally, I have 5 rooms booked. Commissioner Congdon not attending.
No.
Commissioner Bowles, maybe.
Still questionable.
I have a room for you.
Thank you.
That we can cancel. So I think that's about as far as I've gotten so far with our hotel drama.
Okay.
But I've also included on the last page just notes, contact information, you know, where we don't like to stay, sorts of things. So there's anything you would like noted that's open for everyone's use, I can add anything in there.
Super.
Yeah. This is helpful. Thank you.
This is very
good.
Yes.
So it's for all of us. I hope for it to be more useful than last year. As last year, it was initially intended only for my use to stay organized. So any way that we can make this more useful for all of us is my intent.
Just, you know, and it is not my intention to make life at all difficult on you. I'm looking at the March and April Waputa meetings. You've signaled the Hilton governor, but you will circle back and look at the one we've been staying in, which is what's it called?
DoubleTree. Yeah.
It's right on the last page.
It is the
Town Place Suites Olympia.
Town Place won't give us their group rate.
Okay.
But the Double Tree, okay. Talk to commissioners to know about a 103 rate.
If for the Town Place won't for any time or just during legislative session?
I'm not positive. They wouldn't work with Lena for group rates.
And I talked with, or attempted to talk with the manager of the hotel, leaving my phone number and a request to call me and a message with the person at the front desk as to why I wanted to talk, and they never returned my call.
They're in the catbird seat because it's a nice location.
Yeah.
These notes are, when I found the dates, these were the hotels that Waputa had negotiated rates.
Okay.
So I'm just trying to keep all the information together.
Keeping life simple on you as we can.
But I absolutely will look to have a conversation with the sales director, the DoubleTree, and see if we can just book those through the year.
Yeah.
At a good rate.
Okay.
Is there anything else I can do?
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Item 23, Steve. Follow up.
Okay. There we go. Okay. Okay, so we answered at the last meeting, I believe, the timeline on White Pine projects and why we needed that by June. With that. You wanted a specific example, latecomers fee. Hopefully you heard that today. Also, the 36 areas around the meter base, we answered that today. HDL load additions and opportunities for improvement, you heard that today. And then there was a question about what percentage of our residents use the parks, and we sent out some information this morning about that.
Right.
That you received. And I saw, Commissioner, you had a follow-up question, which we will respond to.
You bet. Okay.
So I think that's it. That's all we have.
Okay. Delegation from today?
So we committed to get back to you on the utility-focused education programs. So we'll schedule that. We need a little bit of time to make sure we've got a good inventory. Right. Not quite sure what the timing will be, but within the next couple of months, let's say. We committed to come up with some options for you to think about reserve funding for facilities planning. We also, I know, need to give you a more in-depth briefing on facilities planning as well. So we'll pull those together and get back to you. It'll probably be in the January timeframe, I guess.
And that facilities planning, Commissioner Congdon mentioned to me earlier today that it would really be good if we individually or by twos or whatever could see some of the needs of our facilities that we're talking about, like the tech shop and that. So if that could be arranged.
Like a tour?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we'll do that. That's a great idea.
So a meeting setting or in
no.
Two by two?
Probably it'd be easier to, okay. Yeah.
Then we don't have to announce it.
Right. Yeah, no, yeah. Right. I've been to the tech shop a number of times, so I wouldn't need to do that. But
and you made it out?
No comment.
She said she wanted a mask.
but no, I talked with Randy about it, and I was just going to kind of informally drop in with Gary, but Randy felt like we should do it a little more formally, plan for it. So that makes sense.
So you're aware of it when it's going on?
Yep, that'd be good. Yeah, we'll put it together. And I just want to check with you. At this point, I'm not sure if I have a follow-up action item for the continued conversation on the public power benefit funding for next meeting. Is there additional information that we should be preparing for you, or is it really just a matter of you want to think it over some?
Yeah,
I think it over.
Think it over.
Okay. Just wanted to be sure. Okay, that's it.
Okay. I do not expect there's any additional public comment since there's no public in the room. We have need to set two special meetings, one on Monday, December 12th, the second on Tuesday, December 13th. They're in different locations, so we, I don't know, fellow commissioners, how you want to do this, but if you want to have two meetings or one motion for both, I think you get to choose.
I will just start and say I move that we set a special meeting for Monday, December 12th at 1 p.m. for the purpose of the commission meeting with the 12th District delegation in the commissioner's boardroom, 327 North Wenatchee Avenue, Wenatchee, Washington.
Should that resolution read the 12th District Legislative Delegation to be for clarity purposes?
If she accepts the amendment.
I didn't make an amendment. There wasn't a second yet, but I picked up on that.
I will change my motion to include 12th District Legislative Delegation.
Yeah. Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Been moved and seconded to set a special meeting for Monday, December 12th, as previously stated. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried.
We'll make sure that shows up in the public notice as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Keep going.
And I move to set a special meeting for Tuesday, December 13th, 2016 at 1 p.m. for the purpose of the Tri-Commission pre-legislative session with 12th District Legislative Delegation meeting to be held at the Confluence Technology Center, 285 Technology Way, Wenatchee, Washington.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to set a second special meeting for Tuesday, December 13th for the Tri-Commission to meet with legislators. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Are there any other matters, and are we really in need of an executive session today?
We are, we think. And so we think it would be about 30 minutes.
Okay. There's no other business to come before us. We'll take a short break of until 10 after 2. And come back and meet in executive session for approximately 30 minutes.
And if you could,
for the purpose of
it should be on your agenda
to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, or potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and legal risks.
Thank you.
Okay, 10 after. All right. It is 2:45. We are coming out of executive session. No votes were taken. No decisions were made. Is there any additional business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we stand adjourned.